right? Frank sent us. You bring a horse for me?
Looks like we're... Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
That's a cut from one of the best, if not the best, Western films ever made, Once Upon a Time in the West, with Henry Fonda and James Bronson, Charles Bronson. I'm telling you, that was one hell of a movie. I must have seen that thing a dozen times, and I still like to go back and watch it once in a while. Yeah, boys, you brought too many. Yeah. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in north central Indiana on a foggy day. Yeah, it was foggy yesterday morning. It's just as foggy this morning. Something weird about that. My security cameras have infrared on them. And when you get a lot of fog or moisture in the air, it on the screen, it looks like hundreds of little moss flying around, swirling around, and all that. That's really strange. It's sort of mystified me, but that's the way it looks when you're looking on the monitor. Thousands of little white things churning around. I don't know whether that's just the liquid in the air, or whether that's some shit they're dropping on us again. Okay. And we're at P.O. Box 401, as usual. Yeah, I'm sort of tight and cramped in there, but I get in there once in a while. P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Thank you for all the fellows that have gotten their donations in, and some who've even kicked in a little more. And that reminds me, I got to get some money orders for the POWs today. So that's today. This is the 7th of October, 2015, and it is David Lane's favorite day, Wotan. That's right. I remember when we discussed it, he didn't quite know what he wanted to call what he was doing. And, of course, a lot of guys have used Odin and all that kind of stuff. And I said, my pick would be Wotan. And he said, yeah, that does sound pretty good. So a lot of his stuff, he talks about Wotan. I want to run a little talk I did on poverty, or one I read and I commented on. One thing a lot of people don't realize is, white people don't realize, of course, so many of them are brain dead, they wouldn't realize anyhow, but anyhow, I'm going to tell you. The Republican Party has been shrewd and clever as hell and devious. The whole Southern strategy was to nullify the white presence in the Democrat Party, and give the illusion that the Republicans were going to be the benefactors of the white people, the white working class. Well, if you know who the top Republicans are in the world, you'll know that that isn't going to happen. But they somehow convinced most people, in fact, they sort of convinced me too, that they were more in that area of thinking. Well, that's not true at all. They were planning to screw the white man right from the beginning. And then they went from that to giving the illusion of being white racist. Maybe they want to consider themselves white racist capitalists, but they certainly were not white racist socialists. And when I mean that, I mean taking care of the white race. the white working class. So then the big game for years was just keep inferring all the blacks. You know, all the blacks are on welfare, and they're bad. And of course, it's tempting to go along with that, and we did, didn't we? Blame welfare queens and all that. Well, there's sure as hell a large share of blacks on welfare, but what the Republican Party didn't want to confront was why are there more white working class people on welfare? Yes, they were. They always have been, because they have been more numerous. Of course, that's going to go away as millions more pour in here, non-whites from all over the world. But at that time, that was the situation. And so we should have got a clue right then that the Republican Party was not our friend. So once they had used that dodge, though it's just the blacks on welfare, then they went to, you know, all of a sudden now they're anti-racist. You know, before they say they're anti-racist, but they winked at each other when they said it. But you got to remember one thing: these guys are racist if it serves the capitalist, predatory capitalist, and they're not racist if it doesn't. So that's a different form of racism than what I promote for the general white race, the white separatism. They will use racism like they did in the South in the plantation system and so forth like that, and the northern industrial times when they were bringing blacks in from all over the place to go into the factories in Detroit and so forth. But in reality, well, they were doing it, but they were also at the same time behind the scenes encouraging white people to get pissed off and riot and so forth. So this was going on all the time, and it's always been a dog and pony show. I think there's a lot of white racial separatists finally beginning to wake up to that and say, look, these guys over on the left, they're screwed up on the race issue and some of the other issues, but on much of the economics, they're right on the ball. And that's why I use a lot of that stuff. And if it was up to me and I had the power to do it, I would rally thousands of white working class people, and we'd reinvade the Democrat Party to take it back over. And if the blacks didn't like it, they could leave. I think that would be a great fight. That would be fun. Locally, nobody wants the Democrat Party. And all I think about here, where I'm at, is these poor white working people are clinging on the Republican Party, which is absolutely screwing them to death with right-to-work laws and all that kind of stuff. And the CEOs and corporations are making more and more and more money off the back of the white working man, you know. But still, the Republican Party will point to the Democrat Party, well, you don't want to go over there, it's full of niggers. You don't want to go over there, it's full of Mexicans. Well, how did it get full of Mexicans, full of niggers? Well, all the white people kept sucking on the hind tit of the Republican Party, thinking they were going to do them some good, instead of standing their ground and occupying the Democrat Party, which you got to understand is, no matter how many crooks in the Democrat Party, it was all along historically the party of the white working class. And instead of standing and fighting and not allowing it to be taken over by the non-whites, or at least giving them a special situation where you separatists, you sit over there, you black separatists, and we're white, we'll sit over here. Instead of doing that, they ran into the Republican Party. And so they said, take this rifle, boy, give me that guitar, you're going to the Middle East, you know. You're going to fight for the corporations. That's all they're fighting for. All of these you know, well-meaning white Aryan young men are either signing up because they can't find a job or signing up because they can't get into college. You know, it's going to cost you 50, 60 grand to go to college. That's a monstrosity in itself, you know. So you'll see in my shows and what I say, I'm moving very much towards adopting a lot of democratic populist type ideas from the old days, because that's where we should be, sort of like early National Socialism in Germany. So I call it Aryan Socialism. Now, I know what the right-wing so-called leaders are saying. I know what they say. That Metzger, he's no good. He's a socialist. Well, how come these guys in the right wing, the Stormfront and so forth, push Hitler all the time? He was a national socialist. I mean, what part of national socialist don't you understand? Even if he misused it later on terribly, but he was a socialist. So I can't understand that, you know. Now this Bernie, what's his name? Bernie up there in Vermont. He's a Jew. Now, but Rockwell, I'm sure if he was alive, George Lincoln Rockwell, he would consider this guy a tame Jew. Now he's no friend of ours racially, but on the working class side, he does great. So I'm not going to tell anybody to run out and vote for this Jew, but on the other hand, he talks more turkey for the working class than any of these other people in the Democrat Party or the Republican Party. So things are getting a little confusing, and we're going to have to try to work within whatever we can work within. That's my opinion. I hope this guy does well, because he's a thorn in the side of the capitalistas, Bernie Sanders. And if you hear him speak, he's talking working class all the way. And he's not just standing there talking black working class or Mexican working class. He's talking working class. And so anyhow, like I say, it gets confusing, but we have no future in the right wing. If we're going to survive, it's not going to be in the right wing, I'm going to tell you that. There may be a few things that they espouse that we could go along with, but in the long run, that's not where we need to go. In fact, we don't need to go party anyhow. Parties are the bane of the republic, and we never should have had political parties in the first place. And if they talk about democracy all the time, true democracy would mean on all major issues in the country, you would vote like a plebiscite. You'd have a button on the front of your TV. Yes, no, or maybe, you know. You want to go to Iraq? Fuck no. Well, they don't have room on that front of the TV for that fuck. But they never wanted a democracy in this country. Democracy is an utter failure anyhow. Even the first democracy in Greece collapsed very soon after it came on the scene. So I don't know why they're so in love with democracy. Well, maybe because they never really put it in action. They say this is a democracy, but look all around you to all the things you can't do. And you begin to get the message. So anyhow, here is this little talk I put together yesterday. I borrowed it from someone else. He may be a flaming left-wing progressive. I don't give a shit. Those labels don't mean anything to me anymore.
Let's look into poverty. It should come to no surprise that according to the article, Deep Poverty Increased Nationwide After 1996, when the welfare system was changed, the number of people on cash welfare was drastically reduced, and the amount of time people could receive benefits was limited. This was a public policy decision taken by elected officials at the national level. All at once, the safety net for the poor, and particularly those at this deep level of poverty, all but disappeared. The Inquirer article of September 30th goes on to state that most Americans cannot fathom the level of privation that deep poverty represents, unquote. I am not sure this is the case. Deep poverty is very visible, considering that at present 81% of Americans live in urban environments. In such environments, it's easy to encounter the homeless and the beggars, most of whom are in deep poverty. So ubiquitous are they that a Hollywood movie was recently been made about them, entitled Time Out of Mind, and starring Richard Gere. Here is a quote from the Philadelphia Inquirer's October 2nd film review. Quote, people talk on cell phones, run for the bus, head for meals, almost uniformly indifferent to the fate of the homeless man Gere portrays, a white man. Also, keep in mind that it is not that long ago that people had older relatives who lived through the Great Depression, a time when deep poverty was even more visible. That story is a big part of the nation's modern history. Rather than pretending that Americans cannot fathom deep poverty, it is better to argue that popular deception is more complex. When the non-poor see the homeless person, they probably feel a bit of worry and disgust all at once. In the end, they turn aside and pretend not to see, and this denotes a collective sentiment of not caring enough about the problem to push for the policies needed to correct it, policies which go way beyond welfare. Why would this be the case? Here are a couple of reasons. First, there is the fact that the people of the United States, perhaps more than any other Western country, are still influenced by the primitive outlook of the 18th and 19th century capitalism. In those centuries, both the middle and the upper classes favored government restricted to three functions: one, defense of the realm; two, police, courts, and the enforcement of contracts; three, the upholding of the sanctity of private property. Care for the poor was the responsibility of the churches. And I might say, as Terrible Tommy, that this is what brought on the invention of socialism. And, of course, you have to understand there's a good socialism and a bad socialism. The entire setup was designed to maximize individual freedom by keeping government small in both power and scope. Maintaining this status would also hold taxes down to a minimum. You can easily see this attitude towards government in the ideology of the Tea Party and the conservative politicians who cater to that group's complaints. For instance, take the reason given by Ben Shapiro, a journalist and Tea Party advocate, why the Republican Party was successful in the 2010 congressional elections. Unquote. In 2010, Republicans soared to historic victory because the much-aligned Tea Party spearheaded mass resistance to Obama's takeover of the healthcare industry, unquote. The statement is a gross exaggeration, at least as to the claim that government had taken over the healthcare industry. It did no such thing, but rather moved to work with private insurance companies so that as to facilitate healthcare for the poor and uninsured. However, spending tax money on the poor only fed into the paranoia over the big government that afflicts Shapiro and his lot. Tommy says, yeah, that's right. No bigger, the big winner in that big fight with Obama about that health care was the insurance companies themselves in tandem, in league with Obama. Capitalism wins again. Another angle on this sentiment can be found in the declaration of Michelle Bachmann, another Tea Party advocate, that the Tea Party stands for the fact that we are taxed enough already. This statement is misleading at best. While it is true that those of moderate and low income are often highly taxed, those of high income are definitely not. In the U.S., the wealthy pay lower taxes than those of moderate income. Finally, Elizabeth Warren, a liberal Democrat, has correctly concluded that the Tea Party is dedicated to unraveling just about everything the federal government had ever built. That is straight out of the playbook of primitive 18th and 19th century capitalism. There is a second reason why many non-poor Americans do not actively concern themselves with poverty, deep or not, and that has to do with what I call natural localness. The generic tendency for all of us is to concentrate foremost on our local sphere, thus caring like charity begins at home and usually does not go far beyond it. Even if it goes there, the way I've noticed even small towns have people on the street. We care for our family and friends, sometimes though not always, for our neighbors. Local co-religionists, Christian Zionists, if they've got some money, co-workers or others in local social groups we might identify with, but we rarely actively care about strangers. The primitive yet still extant capitalist ideology referred to above comes in here and reinforces this space between us and the stranger who happens also to be poor. This ideology teaches that poverty is a personal failing with moral implications. That is, if you're poor, it is your fault. It is because you are lazy and otherwise morally deficient. Well, a lot of people found out different when 2008 and the crash came, because people who had been sanctimoniously independent and had pretty good money and a good job and were being paid decent wages all of a sudden found themselves living in a car. The possibility that poverty, and the particularly deep poverty, could be a structural problem of both capitalist and racial or ethnically based economies is never considered in this interpretation. Well, I'm not interested in the non-white part of this argument. I'm not being cruel, but the white race has evolved to what it is, and other races will have to do the same way, Darwin. There, I got it out finally on a brain fart. Incidentally, I saw a bumper sticker on a car today that I laughed my ass off. Said on the back of this van, it said, "Daddy left a fart and we can't get out." It's sort of like the politics. The Republicans and the Democrats are leaving a lot of farts and we can't get out. The possibility that poverty, and particularly deep poverty, could be a structural problem of both capitalist and... I read that before, dummy. The argument given here that not caring is an age-old tradition, well, it is, of greed, should not be taken to mean that there are no individuals out there who do, in fact, actively care and advocate for strangers who are poor, oppressed, and otherwise mistreated. One way Tommy recommends that you never send any money through a church or any other group, and especially don't send any money overseas. But if you want to help somebody and you see them around, just walk up and give them some money or give them food or something. Some of our guys have told me that they carry a bag of canned food around with them, and when they run into some poor white guy, some veteran or whatever on the street, they give them a few cans of food, which I think is a great idea, doing your part. There are individuals who actively advocate for the ultimate strangers, people suffering on other continents. Well, this is ridiculous. You can't do that, because you don't know who's in between anyhow, and we're not in the business of building up other races. We struggle to get where we're at, and they got to struggle for where they're at or where they want to go. There are even those who dedicate their lives to giving solace to incarcerated murderers. Well, at least POWs, even the Christian Zionists, the way they interpret the Bible, says that you visited me in prison, and that was a good thing. The point is that these folks are a small... And why did these people murder? You got to check that out, too. They may have a very good reason to have murdered. Anyhow, if you will, countercultural, despite occasionally getting good press. It might be the case that we could, over time, teach the nation's youth to be more caring of strangers indeed. Well, I remember in Identity... Christian circles, strangers meant people of other races, which I can go along with that. So we don't help or seriously help by depriving our own people to feed the strangers. After all, being human means that we are not necessarily slaves to evolution-rooted tendencies like natural localness. Well, I think we are, to a large degree. But to do this would be a challenge to tradition and wage a political struggle against narrow-minded school boards. Well, not only school boards. So the odds are against it. It is easier to go with the indifference that just comes naturally. But always remember, equality is a myth, rights are a myth. So when somebody says, we got to have equality and then things will be okay, that's bullshit. When they say, give me my rights, well, you never had rights. You had privileges granted to you by the ruling class. And as long as you've got predatory capitalism controlling things at the top, and with them not paying any taxes or very little taxes, but they're saying to the poor, let them eat cake. Tommy signing off.
Well, I got a nice letter from David Tate the other day, POW and order member. Dear Tom, received $25 from you on my account a few weeks ago. About the same time, I also got a letter from you. Thanks. I've been very busy with multiple projects, one which has only just been sent to a sister in Australia is enclosed, a fresh interview I thought I would share with you. It was a struggle to answer, both because of the time, but also because it seemed a mental climb uphill. I'm a slow and wordy writer as it is, so I'll be interested in your thoughts on this one. I have no news to speak of, so I'll print out a few paragraphs I have in memory. One to other prisoners on recent changes and conditions here, and the other on a book I edited correcting some Christian identity positions. Since I was once identity, I feel free to have my say, although it may not be your subject. This place has gone to poop since we got a new major from Potosi. A real shit camp. They started the step-up levels phases. Crap coming out of the hole now. Moved all honor wings to both ends of the camp, stranding something like 40 honor wing inmates in the GP houses. Turned 4 house, where I am, into a GP house, and 5 house into a shit house, where they have put all the troublemakers and anyone with guard assaults. A GP house in these level 5 camps is locked in cells 20 hours per day. We're losing half of our rec because they are running everything late or locking us down for BS. We've had 2 major shakedowns in the past 3 months, the second conducted by assholes they brought from Potosi and Farmington. Apparently they really souped up these cops before they came in. I expect them to wreck ourselves, but these punks went the extra mile spraying baby powder all over our desk, lotion into my cellie's laundry, setting both our clocks back 15 minutes. I guess they thought we'd miscount, and even smashed up a cherry pie I had into mush. They looked up, and I don't know how many people, for BS contraband, not keeping our head on the wall or talking while we were wrecking our stuff. They were wrecking our stuff. They confiscated contraband from every cell and literally handed out CDVs to half of the inmates who had contraband. Things like old sunglasses, gloves, and whatnot old heads had from the old days were often the contraband. The fuckers were laughing and joking while they finished up our cell. I suspect most of these people see themselves as purveyors of justice and Christians and go to some Judeo church or another. May God in heaven treat them with equal fairness in their lives. I'm not sure how long this insanity will last, but expect it will be continue to get worse until this major or warden leaves, which rumor has it may be in the next year. Well, you know, if the Republicans get in as the presidency, they change all these wardens, because these wardens are, this is a plum they give out to political supporters primarily, is wardens and things like that. I've seen things change so often in this. I've seen things change so often in this system over the years that I expect bad to happen. But some of this stuff has actually caught me by surprise. One of the things that... Just a minute, I got to change this mic. I'm not sure how long this... I've seen things change so often in this system over the years that I expect bad to happen, but some of this stuff has actually caught me by surprise. One of the things that got in the way of answering my mail was a book draft I was editing on the Israelite migration myths by Jacob and Pastor Harrell. The Israelite migration myths were fabricated in the 16th century when Cromwell, the so-called architect of English Reformation, brought the Jews back to England to ease the return of the previously banished Jews. The Antichrist-like lovers claimed that the British were the so-called lost 10 tribes of Israel, and hence kindred to the Jews, who they called the tribe of Judah. Over time, this doctrine grew into British Israelitism, which later led to odd offshoots such as Armstrongism here in America. Armstrong posed that the Britain and America were the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, and the Jews Judah, but that the evil Germans descended from the evil Assyrians, which is why Germany pops out so many Nazis. In the early to mid-1990s or 1900s, far-right preachers in America twisted the theory again to produce Israel identity by reformatting the twisted facts and slanting the history of the British Israelis. Identity reformatted the migration myths to include all European nations as the tribes of Israel, making Germany and Judah properly identified the modern Jew as mongrel impostors and or the literal seed line of Satan, depending upon which branch you look at. Unfortunately, over time, identity has gathered a mishmash of denominational positions that not only clash with one another, but which are generally derived piecemeal from Judeo so-called Christian doctrines that were often designed to subvert primitive Adamic Christianity, Adamic Aryan. Basically, every new preacher to join identity over the past century has failed to leave their Jewish, Judeo-Christian baggage at the door and has dragged many false doctrines which were originally designed to pander to the Jews into identity. And so identity has remained divided into the dozens of schools of thought. Well, anyhow, that goes on with that stuff. David Lane is still a Christian, but I give tribute to David for his suffering and his great service to Bob Matthews in the order. But he seems to be changing quite a bit from when I used to talk to him. You see, England was subverted by this British Israelism. They even had the Queen was involved in it after a while back in the 1800s. So then it came over here and it came to Canada first. I remember visiting the man who was running the Covenant People's headquarters up in Canada. I visited him back when I was identifying with the identity struggle. And then it slipped down into the United States, and they had it turned around to where the Germans were the Assyrians. They were bad, poor Germans. No matter what happens, they turn propaganda around to go after the Germans. So anyhow, then it was changed again in the 40s. And Henry Ford's right-hand man got into it, and then later, I forget all the names. I've got all their books on my shelf, but it began to change again, and then Colonel William Gale got a hold of it, and him and Wesley Swift and Comparé down in San Diego, they changed it quite a bit too, and so anyhow, it... That was my last stop with Christianity, was Christian Identity. I got off the train, and that's it. But I still support David Tate, and like I say, he is gradually changing and for the better. But he's a stand-up Aryan fighter and a good man. He was only about 18 when he was arrested, and so he spent almost all his life now in prison. Fighting your fight. I think since David has sent me this long thing about the problems with identity and Christian religion, I'll begin to send him some things that that I have, because I didn't want to cause a problem before by sending him things that would infuriate him. I don't think it's a good thing if a guy's in prison, locked up maybe 20 hours a day, to send him stuff that's going to piss him off. But now that he's opened the door, I'm going to try to educate David a little farther. On that Israel identity branch of Christianity, it's sort of in some way amusing, because every race in the world now has claimed to be part of the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And I was in Japan. When I was in Japan, they had an identity outfit movement in Japan. A segment of Japanese people think they're part of the lost tribe. So this lost tribes goes on and on and on. It's almost as bad as the Israel government bringing 120,000 niggers into Israel and claiming they're Jews. It's what's funny is the ones that brought them in are the Ashkenazim, who are not Jews and have no real Jewish background. It's amazing. It's amusing, and life is crazy.
Tonight over a barbershop sign, a play on words about a serious subject. Fox 25's Joy Lim Nachran live in Norton with reaction to the sign that spells out Black Labs Matter.
Good evening, Mark. This is the source of the controversy here in Norton tonight, just outside Tom's Barbershop. You can see the sign reads, Support the MSPCA, Black Labs Matter. And tonight, the owner of Tom's is under fire. Barber Tom Stevens says humor is his way of life.
It's just a sign. It's the way to have fun. It's the way to reach out. It's the way to tell people I'm here.
But some residents say this sign outside his barber shop is far from funny.
Putting a joke to something that's really hurt so many people is just, it's not the right way to go.
It reads, Support the MSPCA. Black Labs Matter. Admittedly, making light of the Black Lives Matter movement.
So I think it's kind of funny when you can make a play on words. And the MSPCA is a good thing to support, so Black Labs Matter.
Many voice their frustration on social media.
Of course I'm an animal rights supporter, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, yeah, what he put on his sign could be very offensive. I would be offended by it.
Tom's Barbershop responding online, quote, Some people need to lighten up, ha ha ha, pun intended.
I think it's just offensive because there's been so many tragedies around, you know, racial issues lately.
Still, Tom stands by his statements.
I guess a bunch of people are getting offended by it, but Like I said, I don't really care.
While others insist, it's no laughing matter.
Really, it's not a joke. You know, what he said is not funny.
Now, we do want to point out that Tom does actually use this sign to raise funds for local charities. Within just the last few minutes, he's also called just to tell us that he's decided to match any donation of up to $500 to the local MSPCA. We're live in Norton. Joy Lim Nachran, Fox 25 News.
Well, here's another guy with a sign. People should be putting signs up all over the country and changing those signs all the time. I had the one, White Lives Matter More, up for a couple of weeks. I may put it up again. You would think I would have got a big response out of that, but really, I didn't. So I guess there's a hell of a lot of agreement with that, White Lives Matter More. So here's a barber who's making a joke out of Black Lives Matter. So and some fat, white gal, they're crying, she's offended. Well, every time I go to Walmart, which is not too often, I see these big, fat, overly obese women. I'm offended really bad, man. Quit offending me with your big, fat asses. I mean, when you got legs fatter than most many women's waist, I mean, one leg, I mean, I tell you, it's beyond me, man. And there's no peer pressure. You're going to offend them if you say anything. You know, they're killing themselves, of course. They're committing suicide, really. Well, I see they're going to have a new Star Wars movie, and let me guess, there'll be twice as many non-whites and niggers. Let's face it, niggers in the movie as originally, and some of the other issues. Every time they come out with a sequel to these films of the past, they get more niggers in them. And the niggers are usually the scientists, the presidents, the senators, the bankers, and all that kind of crap. And unfortunately, young kids are given this stuff all the time, and they see it all the time, and they begin to absorb it and believe it, you know? Well, I'll tell you what. There wouldn't be any real Star Wars if it had to depend on niggers. I don't know whether this was meant to be racial or not, but Burger King has come out with a limited edition Halloween Whopper, but it's having a ghastly effect on those who dare to eat the black buns. Reports have emerged that the black bun, which was a hit in Asia last year, will create an unusual green bowel movement with shades ranging from neon to army green. Hashtag green poop has now become popular with social media users sharing their experiences and sometimes photos online. Quote, I ate a Halloween Whopper, a nigger Whopper, Metzger calls it a nigger Whopper, just to see if my poop turned green, and it did, wrote one user. Took like 3 days for my poop to stop being green, but was totally worth it. It's believed the food coloring combination in the bun is causing the bathroom surprise. Wow. Isn't that neat? Isn't that nice? With the world collapsing all us around us, we can concentrate on neon poop. Let's tune in to Max Kaiser and see what the hell he's got to say about the money situation. Now, this is going to be quite a bit about Bitcoin and like that, and I'm sure that not too many of us are that familiar with it, but there's some other commentary here I think you'll find interesting.
Welcome to the Kaiser Report. I'm Max Kaiser. The drug and money laundering cartel is threatened. They're losing control. No, not the Zetas or the Sinaloa cartels. The banking cartels, the dozens of global banks printing money all day long through making loans and turning tricks. Accounting tricks, that is. Stacey?
Max, well, you know, over the years, we've covered thousands and thousands of headlines of all the fraud that bankers are committing around
thousands!
The world.
Thousands! Thousands!
And one of the ways that they're able to participate in all the money laundering that they do is that they can print money. They can print money through issuing loans, so they have the cash to provide the laundromat for many of the criminal organizations around the world. So it's a bit rich, this next headline, because here we have a threat to that cartel, and that is Dutch Bank's innovation chief dismisses Bitcoin. The head of innovation at ABN AMRO has said that Dutch state-owned bank wants to stay away from Bitcoin, but is interested in the blockchain technology. According to a report, Arjan van Os, the head of the bank's innovation center, cited the Bitcoin's association with drug trafficking and illicit activities as the reason behind the bank's decision to distance itself from the digital currency. Please note that, as the article pointed out, is the state-owned bank, because, of course, all the banks collapsed because of all the fraud behind all of their loans that they issued.
That's right. This bank collapsed. It's a state-owned bank. They were involved in massive fraud.
Well, we don't know about them because I've Googled it, and there's actually no headlines relating to them engaged in any fraud, but unlike most of the other banks. So the system itself is fraud. The system of issuing loans has been found to be fraudulent. So therefore, they are part of that system. Now, in terms of this whole notion that everybody is, all these big banks are saying, oh, we're interested in blockchain, but not Bitcoin. Because, of course, that Bitcoin is the thing that removes their power to print money. Here are, the people who could use Bitcoin don't need a bank for permission to engage in exchange. Here they're threatened with this notion that they cannot control it, and the fact that they're interested in the blockchain, which transmits the value across the world. This is the thing that they're interested in. They want to take that bit back for them. They want to take control over transmission of value.
Yes, exactly. So the banks are in the business of printing money. I mean, they issue the money. 97% of the money in circulation is loaned into existence by banks, and they love that business. They get huge benefit from that business. As a matter of fact, they print lots of money, and then they put it on deposit at the central bank, and the central bank pays them a rate of interest to the point where they don't need to take any risk by lending that money out to actually fuel the economy in any meaningful way. Bitcoin and the decentralized blockchain, the distributed ledger, removes everything that a bank can use to extract wealth without taking risk as part of their rentier model, and therefore they don't like Bitcoin. But they will use the core technology of the blockchain to reduce their costs down to zero. Will they pass the cost savings on to consumers? The history tells us the answer is no. They would simply use that to give themselves more bonuses. As a matter of fact, they would probably fire lots of people. All the people that are involved in accounting all over the world for a large bank would be fired. Because they'd say, well, you're redundant because now we have a blockchain to take care of all this accounting. We don't need you anymore. So they'll just fire lots of people. They'll take all the money that they would have paid out in salaries. They'll take all the fees that they would have paid out, and they'll keep it for themselves. And they'll use that money to, influence politicians to bring in more laws to deregulate the business even further to make it easier to co-opt and take even more money.
Yeah, so remember, J.P. Morgan is one of the biggest banks in the world. Jamie Dimon is a billionaire who heads that bank. He recently said, Bitcoin will eat our lunch. So we see also this week in the United Kingdom, regulators were warning banks that basically fintech, all the cryptocurrencies, all the new entrepreneurs, all the new companies emerging out of this will eat their lunch as well, and they better figure out something. And what they're trying to do is not innovate at all. Here's a guy, head of innovation, and what he's doing is trying to take something from somebody else that has been innovated. It's not innovating themselves. Basically, they've come too late to this. They're trying to take out the bit that they get to control right now. They get to control value. They get to take a cut of every single transaction on Earth. They churn. Remember, churn is the process of banking. That's how they take their cut, their senior edge of the printing the money. Now, also, I want to look at this element of this notion that somehow some bitcoins are used for illicit activities, and therefore Bitcoin is not something we want any association with. Here's from a banker. you know, forget the name of the bank because all the banks are part of the same system. And that system, according to a 2009 headline, we covered this on the Kaiser Report at the time, Drug Money Saved Banks in Global Crisis, claims UN advisor. Antonio Maria Costa, head of the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, said he has seen evidence that the proceeds of organized crime were, quote, the only liquid investment capital available to some banks on the brink of collapse last year, 2008. He said that a majority of the $352 billion of drugs profits was absorbed into the economic system as a result. So there he's saying our economic system is, according to what ABN AMRO would say, corrupt.
Yeah, it's funny that they would cite drugs as the reason why Bitcoin cannot be trusted, and yet nobody has laundered money or fostered drug use more than these big banks. They are, by definition, the reason you have a global drug trade. Is because they offer the money laundering services through all their affiliates and associations through the global banking cartel. I mean, it's like standing in front of the entire tunnel that would be packed to the rafters with cocaine and saying, oh, what cocaine? I don't see any cocaine. I mean, they are cocaine.
Well, HSBC, for example, settled with the U.S. Department of Justice recently, and what it found is that they had laundered $8 billion of drug money for, I think it was a Sinaloa cartel, which is much less than what Wachovia admitted to, which was 300 and something billion for the same cartels in Mexico. But what HSBC did, according to the Department of Justice, was they actually created specific boxes built for the money that was coming from the drug cartels. That is in the meat space. Outside of crypto world, that is the block size argument. They were creating a block size unique to HSBC clients. So, therefore, this is an issue that is so ridiculous to even argue for this.
Yeah, I mean,
ABN AMRO's have.
To claim that they are concerned about the drug trade is ludicrous, because clearly they are the drug trade. The only thing they're concerned about is competition. They don't want competition,
yes,
in the money issuance business.
And the fact that they talk about blockchain all the time suggests this is the point.
Yeah, remember, when you have money on a blockchain and Bitcoin, when you have money in Bitcoin, it's your money. You have control of that money. When you put money into a bank, by definition, you no longer control that money. It's the bank's money. So if you want to go to a future where you have control over your money, there's only one possible way to go, and that would be using Bitcoin.
So you mentioned that banks print 97% of all money. They create 97% of all money through loans. In the United Kingdom, 85% of those loans are to mortgage holders. So here we have an entire property market in London that is apparently laundering for the drug cartels as well. So
that's an amazing statistic, because the entire run-up in property prices is so tenuous and on such a precipice of collapse that it's frightening.
Well, here is the headline from July of this year. Foreign criminals use London housing markets to launder billions of pounds. Corporations, usually based in offshore tax havens, are sometimes used by buyers keen to hide ownership of assets, says National Crime Agency spokesman. Foreign criminals are using the London housing market to launder billions of pounds, pushing up house prices for domestic buyers, a senior police officer has warned. Donald Toon, the director of economic crime at the National Crime Agency, spoke after a spike in receipts from a tax on homes bought up by companies, trusts, and investment funds rather than individuals. The government of the United Kingdom, the Treasury, made £142 million this year since that was introduced. So here we have a senior police officer saying that most of this is from drug money laundering here in the United Kingdom, driving up prices. Then the banks come in, issue loans to British taxpayers, British citizens and residents. They issue loans, thus providing the way, unknowingly or not, unwittingly or not, to launder these proceeds, to sell this. They come in, buy this huge property, £10 million. Then some pensioner comes in with their big pension funds that they've got to cash in from this April. They buy it up. They launder the money for them.
That's amazing, because now the pensions schemes in the UK have the ability to buy into these buy-to-let schemes. And what you're saying is that it's mostly used for drug money laundering now.
Well, this is not what I'm saying. I'm only repeating what I have read right here in this headline from The Guardian, that a senior police officer for the National Crime Agency has said that this is mostly from illicit. What does he say? He says it's from money laundering. So from various criminal entities, we're laundering the money. So ABN AMRO, this spokesperson in innovation, would therefore have to say that we are no longer going to be in the mortgage market. Because if we are issuing mortgages, we are basically participating in laundering this money.
Jesus! It reminds me of the opium wars. Remember? You know, that the UK was selling opium to the Chinese to try to rectify their trade imbalance. They had no problem with getting millions of Chinese people hooked on opium. Here they have no problem using their housing market as a money laundering service for drug cartels vis-a-vis the cocaine market. So I guess that's the privilege of empire. You get to do stuff like
that. So going back to this money laundering through property here in the United Kingdom, Toon's comments come amid increasing concern that billions of pounds of corruptly gained money has been laundered by criminals and foreign officials buying upmarket London properties through anonymous offshore front companies. Experts say that London, with its myriad links to tax haven crown dependencies, is arguably the global capital of money laundering. Again, banks issue money, they issue loans, creating money, creating the money in the process of laundering for these illicit gains here in the London property market.
Well, in a healthy economy, you have diversity. Just like in any ecosystem, diversity is the cornerstone of its health. So if you have an economy that's, as you point out, 80-90% driven by house price speculation from a very corrupt source, drug money laundering, the monoculture that results in buy-to-let schemes, and, you know, living here, you see that it's pretty much a preoccupation, obsession by almost everyone in the country is this house bubble. You know, you have an extremely undiversified and fragile economy.
Well, more than that, like, look at Mexico with headless people being, you know, beheaded, people being beheaded because of drug cartels. Here, with the same mentality, you have people being made homeless, thousands of families just in this last year, thousands of families, because as this guy from the National Crime Agency says, I believe the London property market has been skewed by laundered money. Prices are being artificially driven up by overseas criminals who want to sequester their assets here in the UK. So you're causing people to take out 12 times their income in mortgage loans in order to launder all that money.
This is incredible. But we have to go.
Hey, I want the blockchain, not the Bitcoin.
Now, in the so-called third world, if you've been watching it, which most people don't, the GNP of these countries all over the place is dropping like a rock. And people are trying to get their money out of these countries, what's left, and get it into the United States. And so there's a big influx of money from these third world countries that are being broken by predatory capitalism, really, and the military operations, and they're investing in this country. Now, there's a big housing bubble, say, for San Francisco, and that's based upon this money looking for a place to set and save itself. And, of course, followed right behind it is the banks and the cartel, the drug cartels. And this, of course, is driving up the price of property, and, of course, not just regular property, but I mean rental property, to where it's driving thousands and thousands of people into the streets, really, and living in their cars and everything else. So here again, the big banks laundering cartel money, drug money, investing it in large amounts of real estate, and then raising the prices on rents and everything else, and the price of buying property. So you see, it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. So I don't know what to tell you, man, but it's this is something else. But you don't hear this on American radio or TV. They will say, like on public radio, they'll say, PBS, they'll say, well, there's a sort of a bubble in San Francisco, and there's property is going up, up, up in value. Well, they don't give you the reasons behind all this going up and up in value. But it's sort of sick that our real estate system, like in England and the United States now, is being totally controlled, or at least partially controlled, by the drug cartels from Mexico and around the world, and Afghanistan and so forth. So how do you like that, boys? Have a nice day. I'll see you tomorrow on Thursday.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to begin. I'd like to begin by saying, fuck Lance Armstrong. Fuck him and his balls and his bicycles and his steroids and his yellow shirts and the dumb, empty expression on his face. I'm tired of that asshole. And while you're at it, fuck Tiger Woods, too. There's another jack-off I can do without. I'm tired of being told who to admire in this country. Aren't you sick of being told who your heroes ought to be? Being told who you ought to be looking up to. I'll choose my own heroes, thank you very much. And fuck Dr. Phil, too. Dr. Phil said I should express my emotions, so that's what I'm doing. Now, since the last time I rolled through these parts, and I do roll through with some frequency, I'm a little bit like herpes. I keep coming back.
Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is the very real prospect of a new world order.
The New World Order does not mean surrendering our national sovereignty or forfeiting our interests.
I guess you recognize that voice. George Bush Sr., one of the biggest war criminals around. The whole goddamn family are a bunch of war criminals. And just to think, about 25 years ago, I stood within a foot of that son of a bitch. And I didn't even break his nose. Oh, regrets.